The Guardian. Football Weekly with James Richardson.
It's Football Weekly, the show other podcasts want to be when they grow up. Today, we look back on England's reality check as a nation realises if we'd wanted a confused coach with a foreign accent, we could have just kept Steve McClaren. Elsewhere, Trapattoni's back with Ireland. There's the return of Marcello Lippi with Italy. And there's the Olympics. Argentina tear a strip off the Brazilians, appropriately enough, ahead of their final with Nigeria. Our man in Beijing, Sean Ingle, reports. There's transfer talk. Look out, Shevchenko's on the move. Plus, your post. And a look forward to round two of the Premier League. Can Hull continue their dream start? Will Man City stay in the relegation zone? All those questions and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Welcome on board, friends, and I refer today to Kevin McCarra, chief football writer of The Guardian.
Still got the job, that's great. Thank
you. That's exceptional news.
It's good news, yes.
Hello to you, Kevin. Scarily knowledgeable author Jonathan Wilson.
Hello.
Hi, Jonathan. And because you demanded it, Barry Glendenning is back.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Quite literally, one or two people have been asking, where have you been in these opening podcasts? You've been at a wedding.
I was home in Ireland for a wedding. The reception was held in a stately home, and the wedding that was on previously to that was Reading Stephen Hunt. So it had been a Premier League do, but then my no-mark friends took it over.
Right. Did you have a nice time?
A very good time was had by all. It sort of turned into a three-day event, though, so I'm still feeling a bit shook after it. But we'll struggle on.
Right. Okay. I'm delighted to hear it. I was expecting a little bit more colour in your recollections of that, but perhaps you don't have too many recollections. I don't know. Nice to see you back, and a big, big podcast that you return for as we discuss England, the friendly with the Czech Republic, the game that Capello said way back when he first took the job that would be the real test of his team, the first time we get a good look at what a Capello England really looked like. So where do you want to start, Kevin McCarra?
Well, it was another lousy England friendly, and therefore there's continuity, at least in this new regime. You don't know how far to go, do you? Because friendlies are notoriously hopeless. I mean, I can well imagine what Scotland 0, Northern Ireland 0 was like last night, you know. I think what does annoy me is that you think Capello would have a kind of logical structural system that's going to work, because we expect, if nothing else, you know, he's a tactician and a realist and experienced man. And what he's doing is trying to accommodate as many of his leading players as he can. That's fair enough. This means playing Gerrard leftish, but not wide left. And it's logical for a midfield player to do that and cut inside and let the fullback overlap around him. Except Gerrard doesn't seem comfortable doing it. Mm. And he's forcing him into a job that for some reason he doesn't do well.
Just for anyone who missed this, England drawing 2-2 with the Czech Republic. And all sorts of worrying things, particularly the fact that England were noticeably worse after Capello's half-time team talk than before, just dismal stuff all round.
Indeed, I mean, and you could fault virtually everyone. I mean, I wouldn't say David James had a bad game, but he'd like to have...
You wouldn't?
I'd like him to fling himself... I'd like him to fling himself and not save the free kick rather than just watching it. It looks better, doesn't it, if you hurry yourself
towards it. Well, it was a phenomenal free kick from Jan Koloski. I'm a little bit more concerned about the time that he had a wander off down to the sidelines.
But the fact that he also didn't see the Jan Koloski free kick at all, because he blinded himself, you know. He was standing directly behind a pile of...
Fair good point.
That free kick, I mean, it's a very good free kick. I don't think it's a great free kick. There's not that much pace on the ball.
Well, we're handing out blame. John Terry as well, worth mentioning, isn't he? Before we forget.
You know, for the first goal.
Oh, don't worry, there's going to be time.
Yes, all good, thank you. We'll get back to that.
Part two, the blame. people posting in, and obviously there were some. Vancouver Ram, it's great to see that England has moved on. No more worrying about whether Gerrard and Lampard can play together. No more debating whether Beckham should be in the team. No more concerns about the lack of a striker. No more underperforming superstars. This is, I think, the thing. We all thought Capello was going to be ruthless, no, and change all that and cut out all the deadwood. But instead, it's the same old team with the same old problems. Do you think Capello's playing, you know, the longer game here? He basically gave all the old lags a run out and let them be really terrible. And that way, nobody's going to complain when he axes the lot.
Scott Murray said that to me in jest this morning like that. He reckoned it was a masterstroke by Capello to give the lags a run out, show how absolutely dismal they are, and now they'll all be dropped for the...
But, I mean, that's the worrying thing. thing, isn't it, that if it was a time to do that, it was the friendlies didn't mean anything at the end of last season. Yeah. Mm. No friendlies mean anything. These friendlies are more important than most friendlies, the ones that just happened. A, because at the start of the season when your fatigue hasn't set in, you haven't got the jadedness. And B, it's the last friendly, it's the last chance for him to get it right before the serious stuff starts.
Well, yeah, although he does still have Andorra.
Yeah, but Andorra's not a test. You won't find anything out against Andorra. This is at least a proper test. And actually, you know, it's a good friendly to have arranged. Because the Czechs and the Croats, they play a similar style of football. They both have very technical midfields. They both have an issue at the moment with forwards being lacking, injury to Eduardo in Croatia's case, just because of a generational thing in the Czechs' case. Mm. So playing the friendly makes sense, but only if you're going to play the team that you plan to play against the Croats. And if this is a team that's going to play in Zagreb, in England,
I think it is, Jonathan. You think about it, that team last night was effectively the same one that played against the USA in the previous home game, except that Hargreaves is injured, so Barry played instead. So we must assume that is what he reckons his team is. And rather than letting the old boys prove they should be discarded, I think he prizes the old boys. And we saw that immediately when Micah Richards was sent into exile from the squad. Capello, not in the least impressed with the idea of him as a kind of budding prospect. He doesn't want a prospect, he wants a hardened pro.
Mm-hmm. So why is he getting $6 million a year to do what is ostensibly the exact same job as McLaren was doing? Why not keep McLaren on?
Well, I think in the end, if people expect better results, and we'll have to wait and see if he has a competitive game, I suppose. We'll all call him a hero if he gets a draw in Zagreb, of course, won't we, which he may do.
I think, though, a lot of the problem is it's the players, again, they're still not good enough and they still have far too high an opinion of themselves. Mm. When Lampard's number went up last night, he sort of looked to the sideline and said, what, me? I'm being taken off? Why am I being taken off? And he'd done nothing, but it obviously hadn't dawned on him that he'd done nothing. He was just anonymous last night. Mm. And these players, they're still, and this is exactly what I said probably a year and a half ago in here, they'll probably qualify. As it happened, they didn't the last time, but they're not up against much. You know, it's between them, the Croats, and the Ukraine. They'll probably qualify.
Can we just point out, only one team from the group is guaranteed of going through?
He's trying to wind you up, Jonathan, by the way.
It's working. Russia are better than Ukraine, but they're not that much better. Belarus drew 0-0 at home to Argentina last night. This isn't an easy group, especially not with only one team guaranteed a qualification.
I watched the game on television, and Harry Redknapp was very forthright in his opinions on Setanta after the game. And I noticed that several newspapers have made great store of the fact that in English pundit in offering, you know, opinion shock, and that was one of the more interesting things I took out of the game, because in Ireland pundits, you know, they've been getting stuck into the players for a long time. But I think it was quite, I didn't agree with everything Redknapp said, but it was quite nice just for once to see someone offer an opinion that wasn't completely bland.
What's his main point? What is his?
He described it as one of the worst English performances he'd ever seen. I'd sort of agree with that, all right. But you wouldn't have to be a football expert to make that deduction. He also said that he wouldn't have any more than two or three of the Czech players in his Portsmouth team. I think he was on thin ice there, considering how his Portsmouth team have been performing recently. But that was, for me, a bit indicative of this English opinion. Like, when they drew Croatia in the World Cup qualifiers, some English journalist was heard to opine, oh, we can beat them, when in fact, you know, they'd dicked all over England a couple of weeks previously, and England are quite clearly incapable of beating them. So, but yeah, it was
the point he was perhaps most forceful about was about Steven Gerrard, saying that he was absolutely brilliant week in, week out for Liverpool, more or less, but yet put him in an England shirt and he can't seem to function at all. And in his words, we are killing Gerrard.
Well, is he suggesting then that his nephew should be dropped?
Well, I think he may well be doing that. Fabio Capello, when this was put to Capello, what Harry Redknapp had said, he said, I am sorry for Mr. Redknapp because Gerrard didn't play on the left. Sorry, you'll have to ask him, he didn't play left.
Well, that's kind of splitting hairs, I think.
It's splitting hairs. He played towards the left, but not wide left. No one's saying he's a winger.
Indeed. There you go. Now, Brian Barwick, although it's in many ways not the most interesting of subjects.
Oh, come.
Right. The head of the FA basically having his resignation announced in half-time of a major England friendly is a little bit curious.
Well, news had got out, and they thought we would have to respond to it rather than letting the thing fester. Right. Yeah, I've only been at the Guardian for 6 years, and I've met three FA chief executives already. It's very exciting. And they all reflect that they all have a very sort of mayfly lifespan, obviously, and they reflect a particular period. period. First one, Adam Crozier. Rah, rah, the glossy premiership, PR man from Saatchi & Saatchi. Next, insolvency petitioner, Mark Palios, to rescue the Wembley project. And then, our last hope is TV money, Brian Barwick from TV.
Oh, he did the job in that.
Well, he did, because he, from, well, to the horror of Sky, who I feel let down by their terrestrial partner, BBC, I'm told, it's gone to Southampton ITV, the home games for England and the FA Cup for the next 4 years. But the contract has risen from £300 million to £425 million, so Barwick's done that. But in May, the FA appointed a chief operating officer called Alex Horn. And I thought, that's odd, that sounds a bit like Brian Barwick's job. But being a bit dim, I didn't put two and two together. There's a kind of squeeze between the new dynamic chairman and obviously a chief operating officer. That squeeze has pushed out Barwick.
I think it's probably fair to say that, like, Barwick did do well in certain regards of his job, but the many English fans who paid good money to sit in the rain and cold last night and boo Frank Lampard, they don't care how much money the FA has. No. They just want a winning team, and they don't have one at the moment. There's no sign of one turning up anytime soon.
I think the point is they can't pay for Wembley unless they pull off these deals. These are very important. I mean, they won't be sitting at Wembley for long if the place is closed down.
Very, very true. Well, there you go. England Czech Republic was not the only game, indeed, as Jonathan has hinted, that took place this midweek, and we'll be looking at one or two of the others in a couple of seconds.
Football Weekly with James Richardson on Guardian.co.uk.
Now, other games. Jonathan, you were across some of these from your lofty perch at Skybet.
Sports Exchange.
That's the one.
Channel 456.
Indeed. Wales got beaten by Georgia. Hector Cooper.
Yeah.
With the Georgian side.
Well, I mean,
that man.
It's a great result for Georgia. I mean, I guess for Georgia, this isn't like a normal friendly, is it? This is a chance for those players to do something for the flag, for the badge, to say, we're giving something back to the Georgian people. And this is quite a weak Georgian side. There's a lot of players who, based in the Russian league, couldn't travel. Kaladze was injured, so quite a young team. But I mean, you saw the chaos in just by their shirt numbers, which to those of us who with an interest in spread betting caused a flutter. That the spread for the total shirt numbers of Georgian goal scorers was, I think, 26 to 28 at kickoff. And then they noticed in the team was a 54, 77 and a 99. And suddenly that spread jumped.
You were betting on the sum totals of the numbers on the shirts?
Of the goal scorers.
No, I wasn't betting.
It's come to this.
I was advising other people to do this.
Right.
And sure enough, a 54
this
and a 77.
This is too complex even for Sean Ingle.
The 77 got the equaliser, 54 got the winner.
Yeah.
131. So if you'd gone in on buying a 28, you were making a fortune last night.
My word. Well, there you go. Elsewhere, Ireland under Trapattoni had a 1-1 draw against Norway. And in the rain, Barry, you saw...
I saw. There's not really much to say about
on,
it.
Then.
The conditions were terrible.
Scotland had a nil... I'm moving on.
Oh, yeah, Scotland.
Yeah, Scotland. There you go. Scotland had a 0-0 draw with Northern Ireland.
Yes, they haven't won a friendly for 12 years at Hampden.
And they still haven't. An abject performance, is that right?
My friend Glenn Gibbons at Scotland was briefing me this morning. He told me they were playing players out of position, George Burley, including a midfielder played in the left where he didn't belong. I thought, blimey, it's catching. It must have crept across the border. They had James Morrison of West Brom toiling dreadfully on the left-hand side. And afterwards, in the true sort of Capello-esque manner, George Burley said he'd found it quite encouraging, the 0-0 draw with Northern Ireland, in which Northern Ireland had a penalty saved or they would have won the game.
Wow.
Despite being down to 10 men to pass 25 minutes.
Jonathan Wilson was about to reprimand me for poo-pooing past Ireland's bog snorkeling game against the Norwegians.
I thought for the first hour or so, until the conditions got ludicrous, I thought it was a very good game, very bright game. And actually, after withstanding 20 minutes or so of Norwegian pressure, I thought they played pretty well.
Meanwhile, in other international friendly action, Italy welcomed back Marcello Lippi on their bench. They promptly went 2-0 down to Austria, but pulled it back to 2-2. Spain got their new direction off to a winning start under their new boss, Vicente del Bosque. 3-0 over Denmark. Xavi Alonso scoring two of the goals. Xavi from Barcelona got the other. Now, meantime, on Tuesday, there was a very competitive match played in the Olympics, the semi-final between Brazil and Argentina, the other semi-final seeing Nigeria do a very large number on Belgium 4-1. But I think we can now go to our man in Beijing, Sean Ingle to hear more about that exciting South American Super Classical. Sean, are you there?
Hello, James.
Hey, Sean Ingle. How are you doing? What are you doing?
Not bad at all. Well, I'm at the women's third and fourth place playoff game at the moment between Japan and Germany. It's 0-0 at half time.
Right, okay. And then, of course, you've got the final to look forward to, Brazil against the USA in the women's football, this evening. But that's not what we rang you up about, though, Sean, is it? This Tuesday, you had the very great pleasure to be at the Brazil-Argentina game.
I did indeed, and my Brazil were absolutely shocking, mate. They sort of dusted down the Christmas tree formation and played 4-3-2-1 with three very defensive midfielders and showed little or no attacking intent. And Argentina took a while to prize them open. When they did, they thrashed them and deservedly so.
Well, I don't want to disagree with you, Sean, but I thought that Brazil were a little bit unlucky when they went a goal down in that they then hit the post twice and had a perfectly valid goal disallowed.
Well, they hit the post, that was true, but then Argentina made it 2-0.
Yes.
Then they had a goal disallowed. So I would say, and the way they played, and you should have spoken to the Brazilian journalists afterwards. They were fuming, they were spitting. They all want Dunga to go, and Aglobo, I know, the next day published a front page obituary of Dunga, basically thinking he should go.
My word! Because it's not just the Olympics, although the Brazilians have become a bit obsessed about the Olympics, the one trophy they've never actually won. It's also the fact that they're doing so spectacularly badly, both in terms of play and results in the World Cup qualifiers.
Exactly right, and I mean, there's two huge games coming up. They're playing, I think it's Chile away, and then they're at home to Bolivia, I think. I checked that the other day, and if they don't get at least 4 points in those games, Dunga will go. The other night, people were talking about possibly Zico coming back, but he doesn't really get on with Ricardo Teixeira, the CBF president. But it looks more likely now that if Dunga goes, Vanderlei Luxemburgo,
yeah, noted jailbird and other interesting things. But you did eulogise, and rightly so, Argentina, who looked absolutely blinding, especially that young man, Hakun Aguero, who scored two of the goals. I learned yesterday that he's having a kid with Maradona's daughter. How scary is that, Sean?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't want to play for against him, would you?
No. No, indeed but, not.
I mean, I know in England, people don't think much of the Olympic tournament, but it certainly meant a lot to the Argentinians. After the game, they were, jumping and dancing and shouting vamos at each other in the halfway line for a good 5-10 minutes while the stadium emptied. And while I was typing away, taking ages as usual to file my report, suddenly I heard loads of banging outside, and I thought, what's this? And I looked out, and there were two coaches right outside, one Brazilian, one Argentina, and all the Argentinians were banging loudly on the windows and dancing the conga up and down their little aisle, not all of them, some of them, except Riquelme, it looked a bit quieter. All the Brazilians just sat there looking morose, and it made quite a nice contrast, I thought.
Shawnee, Baz here. I read a story somewhere the other day that the Italian footballers were going home from the Olympics in coach class, and some Italian athletes who'd actually won medals were back in the cheap seats, and they were grumbling about the fact that, these losers were getting first-class travel and all that. So it would suggest that footballers at the Olympics have just as high an opinion of themselves in this amateur, inverted commas, tournament as they do everywhere else.
Well, the Brazilians actually stayed in Olympic Village. They flew in on Saturday, and they arrived for Sunday lunch, having promised that, because they spent $5 million, apparently, in Atlanta, and it got them nowhere. So they decided they were going to sort of live like people, and they got down for lunch, and they got invaded by people wanting autographs, wanting pictures, and they ended up running away back to their dorms because, there was just too many people. I don't think some of the Brazilians were that happy about having to stay in dorms, but they did do so. But obviously, it didn't do them any good.
Shawnee, just sort of off-piste at the moment, the Olympic Village does have something of a reputation as a bit of a hotbed of just a complete shag fest. Have you heard anything about that while you're over there?
Every year it's the same. There was supposedly 100,000 condoms they geared up for Beijing. I don't think they've been used yet. But to be honest, the Beijing media isn't the sort of thing that goes hunting these things down. I think we perhaps exaggerate a little bit. I'm sure a lot of the athletes just bung them in their bags and they don't actually use them all. But if they did, I think it would work out roughly about six per person during the games, which is pretty good going.
Fill them with water and have water fights or something in the Olympic Village.
Listen, Sean, coming up on Saturday then, the Argentines will be taking on Nigeria, who have won this before, of course, back in Atlanta. Are the Super Eagles going to do it again? They had that monster result over Belgium, 4-1. How do you see this one going?
Argentina obviously go into the game as favourites. They did in 96 when they played Nigeria, and they lost 3-2 in one of the all-time great Olympic Games, which is probably damn near a faint praise, but it was an absolute humdinger. Quite interesting, the weather's not been very good last day or two, and it's not meant to be very good for the weekend. It was raining so much earlier, I almost expect a bearded man with a staff and animals walking two by two to sort of be accompanying to the stadium, and that may make the game a bit more messy and a bit more squalid, but I still think Argentina with Messi, with Gago, with Riquelme, and obviously with Aguero to win.
My word, you've not lost it, Sean, despite all the miles you've travelled. Is everything going well there, just finally, in China? Are you enjoying it there in Beijing?
It's been fantastic. There's been lots of very long hours, but it's been fun, and it's great.
Magnificent, Sean. We look forward to seeing you back here, though.
Me too. I can't wait to see, Barry's smiling face and everyone else. Obviously,
it won't be smiling as soon as you arrive back.
Barry's joking, listeners.
No, he's not,
Jimbo. He's not.
Is he not? All right. Barry's not joking, listeners. Let's move on then. Well, there you go. Sean, listen, have a super time. Enjoy the rest of the game and the final tonight in the women's football. And we'll speak to you soon.
Take care, everyone.
Now, there have been some interesting transfer stories going on in the last couple of days. Hey, Chelsea striker Andrei Shevchenko close to securing a return to AC Milan. Shevchenko worth $30 million 2 years ago, now goes on a free. Not only that, but Chelsea going to pay all his wages just for the Rossoneri to take him off their hands. My word, Kevin, eh?
It's extraordinary, because I saw quotes earlier in the week from Milan about trying to afford his wages and actually paying nothing towards him. Yeah. Milan. That's I don't know, what's the benefit to Chelsea? It's not embarrassing anymore having him around the training ground.
Well, there's that. There's also this theory, I don't know how true it is, that this might involve Chelsea getting in exchange some sort of first dibs on Kaká next year.
Oh, that doesn't really depend on him. He seems to be the one that's not dying to leave.
I think Kaká would probably accept a move. especially, let's see what happens with Milan this year. They still are resolutely refusing to buy anything resembling an under-30-year-old defender. So it could go all spectacularly pear-shaped. The press in Italy are now worrying how exactly Ancelotti is going to fit Shevchenko into the side. The irony being that it's quite possible that Shevchenko might see as much of the bench work in the San Siro as he was at Stamford Bridge, because Ancelotti is less than happy about his arrival.
Chelsea just have given Shevchenko to Lambeth Council or something, and he could have gone sweeping roads and paid his wages? It would have been a lot less. I mean, it just sounds ridiculous.
Well, what Chelsea do get out of this is that they do get to see if Shevchenko actually has any talent, anything left in him, or whether he really is finished. Yeah, if he plays kind of a dozen games in Serie A, they do get to see him on a proper stage playing proper competitive football, which he wouldn't get on the streets of Lambeth.
Right.
He could get it in at Chelsea.
Well, but they'd have to play him, and he's not very good. that would hinder the
hard
league
to
challenge.
Argue with that, I have to say. Now, other transfer moves. Mikel Silvestri, going to Arsenal, first player from Man United, etc., 34 years, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, it's a real shock, I mean, because he's far too old to be an Arsenal player, isn't he? You're meant to be 15 or something to go there. It's politely put out of left field. I don't imagine Arsenal fans are overjoyed, but the squad is very small and they could do with some cover at least.
Mm, absolutely. Djibril Cissé joining Sunderland, is that now confirmed?
I think pretty much confirmed, yeah. Right. I think Sunderland's actually paying a fee to take him on loan.
Okay.
So it's kind of a temporary transfer.
Right.
I think from Sunderland's point of view, I think it's a great signing. I mean, Cissé, for some reason, seems to have quite a bad reputation.
But he did well last year, didn't he?
But if you look at his goals record throughout his career, 70 goals in 110 games for Auxerre. Mm-hmm. Liverpool, 24 goals in 42 starts.
Right.
Now, a lot of substitute appearances as well. And I guess some of the goals probably came in them. And he did score a lot of those goals in Europe, not necessarily in the Premier League.
Right.
But last season, 16 goals for Marseille. So he scored goals everywhere he's been. He can play up front by himself. And he can play off Cameron Jones, so he seems to be the perfect fit for Sunderland.
Right, we won't be playing off Cameron Jones at the moment. Cameron Jones is injured, of course. Barry, you're a Sunderland fan. Happy?
Yeah, I think it's great. He'll dye his hair red and white, and candy stripes. He's married to an English girl. That may have helped seal that particular deal. I think he refused to go, like many before him, to Manchester City. Hmm. So, yeah.
That's true. Him and Silvestri both refusing to go to Man City, who are now being investigated by FIFA over the fact that they still haven't paid for Ilano last year. Colin Young says, if we talk about France, Germany, Italy, and occasionally Eastern European leagues on Football Weekly, why not the SPL? Surely promoted no hope as Hamilton Accies on top of the league for the first 2 weeks, beating third-place favourites Dundee United 3-1 in the process. Surely two highly dubious refereeing decisions in 2 weeks denying Celtic's opposition's wins against them. Surely Rangers selling their best player, then buying three new midfielders, rebuilding the whole of the middle of their team, deserve some sort of mention.
Well, can we say, never mind Celtic and Rangers, Billy Reid at Hamilton, the manager, playing very good passing football on a budget of about 10 pence. And Hamilton were a team that you think almost disappeared, but there they are now in their new stadium and playing in the top flight. And as I say, on a kind of economy operation. So I think that's far more interesting to talk about than referees or Barry Ferguson's injury at Rangers or anything else. I hope Hamilton can be prominent for a bit longer.
Yeah, remarkable, Barry.
I mean, we do give Scottish football the occasional mention once or twice a season when something interesting happens in it. But I think if we start pandering to the moans of individual listeners, then we'll have to start talking about the MLS and the League of Ireland and other leagues that no one's the slightest bit interested in. And if I had my way, we wouldn't be discussing football at all.
Well, we're working in that direction, Barry. Just give us some time.
We could talk about the Edinburgh Festival or more movies, stuff like
that.
Or
our time at the Funfair that afternoon. That kind of thing. Yeah. Movies, yes. In part three, sadly, we're going to be discussing the upcoming round of Premier League fixtures. So do stick around for that, hey. Well, it is the second weekend of Premier League action, and it sees Liverpool take on Middlesbrough. I have to say, as I read that out, I think that's not an exciting fixture to start off with. But looking through the list, there's none of them that you think, ooh, this is the one.
I think that is quite exciting, actually, because I think Middlesbrough are going to do very well this season.
Well, this was Kevin's contention.
Yeah.
Sorry, I haven't heard any podcasts,
you haven't.
That's my actual own opinion. Okay. I'm not.
No, they were my pick as a surprise package of the season.
I think they will do well. They were shaping up to play, you know, they were playing some good football last season, weren't quite getting it right, but I think they'll get it right this season.
They haven't won at Anfield since the 75-76 season.
They may not win this time either, but I still reckon they'll give it a right good rattle.
Right. Okay, well, there you go. They do have a bit of a woeful record away to Liverpool, and Torres has been doing very well against them. Having said that, they did have a fine win against Spurs last weekend, didn't they, Barry? So perhaps this is the season when they come good.
Well, certainly, they seem to have a lot of youth to sustain them. I'm not sure about the midfield. They're a bit light there in some respects. I don't know. But,
I think Degauer coming in is meant to kind of give them a bit more solidity. He seems, I mean, from what I hear from people in France, he seems like a player they've been waiting to break through.
He's only a sub last week, though. But
who's this?
Degauer.
Ah, right.
But tough tackling, no-nonsense midfield players out there.
And gave a very good interview when he arrived, saying, yes, people have compared me to Vieira and Makélélé, but that's just because I'm French and nothing like them, to be honest.
Now, what about Liverpool, though, eh? Because they got the win at Sunderland, but flack and a criticism of Benitez once again, largely due, we had Carvetian complaining about the way that he was singled out for the negative responses, Benitez. But it was also due to the fact that he was busy having a pop at Rick Parry and the club's directors, etc., and this ongoing Barry situation. And
yeah, I mean, I should possibly explain slightly more what I meant when I was talking about it. I mean, I see Benitez's point when he talks about not having had enough money. Mm. When he has spent big money, when he spent the eight-figure sums, he has bought exceptionally well. Robbie Keane possibly will bring an end to that run. And he's only the fifth eight-figure signing that Benitez has been able to make. And it's when he's been trying to fill the squad up with the £7, £8, £9 million players, Pennant, Kewell, people like that, that the problems have come. But I think Benitez certainly isn't whiter than white in terms of the politicking around the club and all the kind of the infighting behind the scenes. So
I think, to John, you can't go through life saying I can only buy players if they cost more than £10 million. Even Man United, players like Evra were cheap, who have done a fantastic job for them. And that's what Benitez has not done. He's signed kind of people who are so-so in many positions, you know, under £10 million.
I mean, Reina's done very well at under £10 million. I think Skirt looks like being a good signing. I think Ago looks like being a good signing. He has made a few of those. I mean, the problem was he's starting at a much lower base than United or Chelsea.
I mean, he can't seem to find fullbacks, can he, for example? You know, maybe, we'll find out with the Senna as the season goes on, I suppose.
Can't seem to find anybody who plays in a wide position.
No.
Either fullback or in midfield. Mm. If you're looking at Middlesbrough, their weakness last week, I mean, David Wheater, I think, is a really, really good centre-back. He was playing at right-back last week.
Mm.
And he, I mean, I know he got the goal, but he did struggle in that position, which is fair enough because he's 6 foot, whatever, massive, not the quickest on the turn. It's not a natural position for him. But Liverpool haven't got a wide player to really threaten him.
He's in my fantasy football team too, God bless him, scoring last week.
I mean, you had a cracking start to your fantasy football. If you're not playing, you really should be, listeners, because you'll be doing better than I will for a start. Barry, have you got a team together?
No. Oh. I have a life instead.
Nice to hear it, Barry.
I think you're totally wise, actually.
I
have never
I wouldn't recommend people play it, but if I start getting involved in fantasy football, then everything else, I stop washing, I don't contact my friends, my family,
interesting,
girlfriend.
Interesting. What's your team called? Listen, Newcastle Bolton, you missed the opportunity to salute and congratulate Newcastle for their exceptional point away to Old Trafford last weekend. Here they are, they're going to be playing Bolton this time around.
Good.
Yeah. But Newcastle, off to a cracking start, eh? Kevin Keegan. Inspiring stuff.
So they still haven't beaten a team in the top half of the Premiership under Kevin
Keegan?
No, but,
you know, early days.
how many months has he been there now?
It's a while. Stoke City taking on Aston Villa. Agbong Lahore, left untroubled by Capello's selection policy during the week.
And Ashley Young. By the way, was featured in the FA programme last night, proving yet again that no one knows what Capello's going to do because, of course, he wasn't in the squad.
Yeah.
I don't know why he wasn't in the squad. I think Ashley Young's a really exciting player.
Well, indeed. And he is more assists than, I think, anybody last season.
Well, and Villa score goals at a terrific rate, don't they?
Well, Bong Lahore's got 7 in 7 league games, it says on this stack-packed piece of paper in front of me. West Bromwich Albion are taking on Everton. Am I right in saying you're going to this game, Jonathan?
That's a well acknowledged in my diary. Yes, I am going to that game, yeah.
Right. What made you choose this one, or was it chosen
for you? No, I get directed. I don't get any choice in these things.
Right. So whereas Kevin's got the Portsmouth Man United thing, which is coming up on Monday, if you're wondering why I hadn't mentioned that already. Yeah. Yeah.
He's a far more important man than I am. I've got to accept that.
You're dying to go to Portsmouth at 8 o'clock on a Monday night, aren't you?
Is it a bit rough when you come out of the stadium?
I quite like places like Portsmouth. It reminds me of Glasgow.
No. See, you can handle yourself.
I know when to run.
It's valuable knowledge, isn't it? Blackburn taking on Hull. Two teams that had excellent debuts in the Premier League for their managers last week. Phil Brown for Hull. And, of course, Paul Ince, who everyone was writing off.
Football Weekly's friend, Paul Ince.
Yeah, top celeb friend, Paul Ince. And, it's all got to come to an end for one of them, or maybe they'll just both draw.
That game, that fixture just conjures up all sorts of images, none of them pleasant, like just sheeting rain, mud, no score, point each.
You're so wrong. Did they not both have 3-2 results in the opening weekend?
No, that 2-1 result.
Hull 1-2-1. Okay, but Blackburn had a 3-2, and then you had that amazing Giovanni goal. Rocky Santa Cruz can't stop scoring.
Oh, no, I'm not slagging off either team. Mm. They both did very well. And, I wish Ince well because he's our friend. And, you wish Hull well.
Brownie's a friend now as well.
Is he?
Yeah. All
right, he's got a great Wearside accent, Phil Brown. I think he's got the most Wearside accent I've ever heard on national telly.
Right.
Well, there you go. I like that.
No end to his talents. Fulham are taking on Arsenal, a London derby. Arsenal traditionally win these. Fulham traditionally don't.
Yeah, Fulham know a lot of new players in this first home game now. I think it's going to be a test for Arsenal. We'll see if they actually are as strong as they were last season, whether they have slipped back slightly.
How about Spurs taking on your boys Sunderland, Barry?
I suspect Spurs will probably win that game.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm right in saying, I mean, I'm turning this off the top of my head, that Sunderland haven't won at White Hart Lane since that Millwall quarter final in '85 when Chris Turner saved the Gary Roberts penalty, which is the best penalty save you'll ever see. If it's on YouTube, look it up because it's a fantastic save.
Right. But that's off the top of your head, Jonathan.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a Sunderland fan, to be fair. Is that on your sheet?
It's not. Yeah, I read that this morning. Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
You're just making this up now. You're presuming he's right and trying to sound knowledgeable by piggybacking his knowledge, which may or may not be correct.
Right. And you're playing the opposite game by disagreeing with whatever I say, because that's the, you know.
Are we in the media? Is that what's going on?
Oh, Kevin. Spurs. Oi Oi Saveloy says there is a big Carrick-shaped hole in the Spurs team when Levy took all that cash from Man United and failed to invest it in a quality replacement. When Spurs address that problem, then they'll improve.
Yeah, well, I think they have got an issue at the back of the midfield. I mean, as we were saying on Monday, they've got all these very exciting attacking midfielders.
And I was agreeing with you, I think.
Yeah. I'm sure you were, yeah. Presumably they're looking to play a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-1-4-1, but it's very hard to see who's going to fill that defensive midfield hole.
It is. Tottenham have only won two of their last 11 Premier League games, including none of their last four at White Hart Lane.
Well, they lost piles of goals, didn't they? I mean, because the good defenders they have often aren't available. And they've now changed goalkeeper. Well, I mean, in terms of Ledley King being doubtful and so on.
And will Berbatov be even on the bench for that game, do you think?
Oh, God. you have to think it should happen. People say it's going to happen, so I guess it depends on Spurs lining up somebody else, first of all, and their Shaven thing seems to run into the sands again. Mm. I think it's almost with Spurs, you won't know until the 31st of August whether they've got a good team or a very mediocre one.
I think because of the Ramos connection, actually, Spurs are going to turn into the new Sevilla in that there will be goals galore in all their games. You're just not quite sure which end they're going to go in or who's going to score them.
Interesting. Wigan-Chelsea. Chelsea amazing last weekend against Portsmouth. Can they do it on the road at the JJB?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I think it's the real test of Chelsea, isn't it? Were they very good or were Portsmouth very bad? Yes. I'm still not sure what the answer to that is. And this will give us a bit of a clearer indication of that.
Portsmouth are rich, aren't they? They seem baffled by the fact that Chelsea are playing one forward, so we'd never seen this tactic before. And the four defenders all stared at Anelka and didn't know what to do. Well, Chelsea ran right in midfield. I'm sure teams can do better than that, you know.
Meanwhile, West Ham are going to be at Man City, who are having a really terrific time at the moment. Mark Hughes went to see Thaksin Shinawatra the other day to ask him what on earth's going on and probably didn't get any kind of happy response.
Well, Thaksin said, I've got bigger things to worry about than Man City,
yeah.
Thank you.
But, I mean, you know things are going badly when players are turning down to go to Sunderland. I say this as somebody who spent 18 years of his life in Sunderland and very much loves the place.
Okay, and then Monday, Portsmouth Man United, which will have been played by the time most people hear our Monday pod. So there you go. Portsmouth have lost their last five league games in a row, apparently. They scored just one goal in the last six. Is that true?
It is. They were absolutely hopeless before the FA Cup final last season, and they kind of really defended quite doughtily against the mighty Cardiff to win the FA Cup final. They were extremely tedious in the Community Shield, and last week they fell apart. So maybe they've got so bad now it's time to pick up.
However, if Man United don't have the services of Dimitar Berbatov, you have to wonder how well they're going to do, because Rooney is not looking the swashbuckling player of old, and where Cristiano Ronaldo doesn't play, United have only won two of their last six.
Yeah, and I also think that Portsmouth have reached that point and maybe starting a fight back now and trying to prove that they are half-decent. So I think they'll be up for the game on Monday.
Well, after Harry's stirring rhetoric after the England performance last night, he will look a bit of a chump if his team go out and roll over.
That is true. That is true. Well, lots to look forward to then on the weekend, and we will, as ever, have a full review of the entire weekend's activities on Monday. So make sure you join us for that. In the meantime, thank you very much, Kevin McCarra.
Thanks, James.
Sean Ingle in Beijing. Thanks, James. Barry Glendinning here. Jonathan Wilson here. And our new producer, Pete. We've got another producer,
Pete. Mark 3.
Mark 3. And you, the listener, as ever, we hope you have a splendid weekend and we'll speak to you on Monday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.